This episode of the Halloween Podcast is brought to you by Acorns, the app that invests your change automatically. If you're like me, you have zero inside of your savings for future you. What Acorns does is rounds up all of your debit card purchases and invests that change for you automatically. I got started months ago and my account is slowly growing for future me. I didn't even notice it coming out of my bank account. It's that subtle. Support the Halloween Podcast by signing up using our link. You get a $5 sign-on bonus, and so do we. Just go to thehalloweenpodcast.com/acorns, click on the banner, and get signed up. That's thehalloweenpodcast.com/acorns. Now let's get the show started. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Halloween Podcast. I am your host, Lyle Perez. We're on day number 6 of our 31 show countdown, and on today's episode, I have the guys from the Dissecting Fiction with me again. Steve and Vinny, how you guys doing?
Doing well, man. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us again.
Yeah, perfect. So keeping up with this year's theme, it's a 90s Halloween countdown. We are going to take a look at the 1997 Halloween episode of Life with Louie. The name of the episode is Louie's Harrowing Halloween, which was the 6th episode of Season 3, and this one originally aired on October 25th, 1997. So Life with Louie, what can you guys tell me about it?
So Life with Louie was loosely based on the childhood of comedian Louie Anderson and was part of the Fox Kids afternoon lineup. So this is the type of cartoon show you'd see when you get home from school.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only other important context to it is that this is really during the last days of the stand-up boom. Louie Anderson came to prominence in the mid-80s during the beginnings of the stand-up boom, really benefited from it, and we're starting to see, like, sort of the end of these comedians being offered these type of projects. But Life with Louie is a successful one.
Yeah. I never thought about that. Who else was part of that? We had Tim Allen, Home Improvement.
Mm-hmm. Howie Mandel had Bobby's World.
Yeah, Howie Mandel, yeah. Seinfeld, of course.
Seinfeld being probably the biggest one.
Yeah.
Who else was among them? I'm pretty sure there was more. Steve Harvey had his own show.
I think a lot of these guys, like Curry on Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Yeah.
And Kevin James is a stand-up, I think.
Yeah, definitely Martin Lawrence you want to put into there. Martin was a big hit for Fox.
Yeah.
And there was, I think, countless failed ones as well. But
it seemed like the 90s was the decade for this type of stuff. Because now that I'm thinking about it, a lot of the shows that I watched all had the comedian in it.
Yeah, from what I understand, that would be part of the goal, like being a regular at, like, the, you know, one of the popular comic clubs in LA, that you would get seen by the right person and get a deal.
Yeah, and I think there's also an element, sitcoms especially at this point are kind of the cheap show to make that changes to reality television as we move forward. But if you could get a strong enough personality in front of the show, it seems like studios were looking for that for quite a while.
Yeah, out of all of them, it was probably, Howie Mandel and Louie Anderson who had cartoons. Was there anybody else? I think everybody else was live action.
John Candy had Camp Candy, which actually was a really great show.
I missed that one.
And then you had some weird ones like Kid in Play and MC Hammer, which, I mean, MC Hammer's not really a comedian, but Kid in Play definitely comedians to a certain extent.
I'd say.
Yeah. But yeah, let's get into the plot of this Halloween episode.
Cool. Okay. So here we are, the fictional town of Cedar Knolls, Wisconsin, in the early 60s. And we have the childhood version of Louis Anderson. And he's in a local supermarket, and he can't help himself. He ends up stealing a single piece of candy.
Yeah, this is because his mom does not allow him to eat candy during the month of October until Halloween.
Yeah, and let's give first impressions of Louis as a cartoon character. I love how he has like a full-on adult voice, and he's such a little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had forgotten about that when I went back to watch this, and I mean, you get used to it, but it's a little strange for those first few minutes. Oh.
It's so weird. He's like the shortest kid out of all of them, out of everyone there. He's always the shortest one. And he just has like this really, not deep, but it's really hard to describe this voice. It's so weird.
Yeah, it's almost like the way they draw him is it's less what Louis Anderson would have looked like as a kid and more if you shrunk down Louis Anderson and gave him a giant head. Like, it's not really like a kid Louis Anderson so much as it is adult Louis Anderson somehow intruding on his own past.
A little body.
Well,
with
said.
The same voice. Yep, that's it.
Okay, so the next day there's a special assembly at school where they have convicts that come and speak to the kids and basically telling cautionary tales about how not to be like them, and they all seem to agree on the fact that it all starts by stealing a piece of candy.
Which instantly starts freaking him out.
Right, he's overcome with fear and guilt and paranoia. And so what he ends up doing is he takes the candy, he takes the single piece of candy, and he throws it into what I remember being a river, like by his house. So he's
that's
essentially destroying evidence.
That's accurate. And then as this sequence plays out, this is one of my favorite things in the episode, there's a very on-the-nose parody of John Carpenter's Halloween theme playing. Yeah, like it's almost note for note as close as you could probably get without getting sued.
It's a nice touch.
Yeah.
So after he throws the candy in the river, he comes back home only to find his little brother with that same piece of candy. So he completely loses it on him. He's screaming, who put you up to this? Then he's like, he's using all these old timey phrases for what's going to happen to him. He's like, you're trying to send me up the river, the big house, the slammer. And then he finally mentions the clink, which, like, you kind of take it for, like, what it sounds like it would be. Like, you know, clink, like, jail doors closing or, you know, stuff like that. But then upon a little research, which we do for this podcast, we found out it's actually a historic prison in Southwark, England. And it also happens to have great reviews on Google. I guess it's a museum now, so you can go there. And I think probably especially around Halloween time. It's quite the experience. So, you know, if you're ever in Southwark, England, check it out.
The clink.
The clink.
You know, we were doing the Scary Stories series, and one of the stories is called Clickety Clink, about these kids who do grave robbing so they can steal money. That's what I thought. I thought it was going to have something to do with that. The clink. the clickety clink.
Yeah, this is like investigative journalism at its best here. So then, after a full-blown meltdown, Louis takes the candy back to the store, but then is scared off by the store manager. He doesn't end up, you know, putting it back into inventory.
Yeah, which kind of got me thinking about that manager. He's way into his job. Like, he's like, we're going to count every single piece here of candy, and if there's one missing, I know who to go after.
Yeah, he keeps citing a full-blown audit, like a very detailed audit that's going to be done.
Yeah.
And in fact, he'll know whose mom to call if there's anything missing from inventory.
Any discrepancies.
Right.
Yeah, imagine, like, buying candy in that store, too. Do you have to count out every piece?
I guess there's a couple stores that do that, right? Like, to this day, like...
I mean, I don't know. I always thought it was you put it in your bag, and then you weigh it, and then you pay the price per pound. But I don't know about individually.
That's definitely like the smarter, more efficient way to do it. But if you go to like Five Below, which we do sometimes before the movies, and I'm not saying we buy candy and then put it in like our jackets and then sneak it into the movies, but you have to count them out. Like it's usually like, you know, 10 for a dollar or whatever. So like it's kind of that style where you go and you just start picking them one piece at a time, and then you're at the register wasting everyone's time where they're counting it out one by one.
Yeah, that was my thought. Was I'm watching this guy take inventory. And I'm like, I thought that was by the pound. Does he sell coffee beans by
each? By the bean? Yeah.
By each individual bean, it all has its own SKU number. You got to scan it. So
okay,
let's keep the plot going because so far there's been zero Halloween.
Okay. So Louis gets home and his mom finds that piece of candy that Louis came back with because he was too afraid to put it back in the inventory. And here's where it gets Halloween-y. She puts it in the basket for the trick-or-treaters, which is like the ultimate betrayal.
Yeah, it was like that night was supposed to be Halloween night, but I guess Louis didn't really care much for Halloween because if it was Halloween day, like that's all he'd be talking about all day.
All right, good point. That's like the biggest plot hole in this one. I actually didn't think of that until you just said it.
Yeah, like I'd be talking about Halloween the whole week of Halloween. Like that'd be right. All I'd be talking about.
It's conveniently the second half of the day in this episode.
Yeah, I feel like this is more of an episode that is focusing on the candy aspect of Halloween and perhaps this story that we're being told maybe originally didn't take place on Halloween. If we're basing this off of Louis Anderson's stand-up, as they say it is, right. Maybe he just stole a piece of on like, you know, September 12th or something. And
they needed a special.
Yeah, they needed an episode.
Yeah, that's a good point right there.
Okay, so Louis's mom puts it in the basket for the trick-or-treaters. Louis runs downstairs, and of course, like, he just misses some kid in a ghost costume, so, like, there's no way to figure out who it is, who takes the piece of candy and runs off. The only clue or identifying mark seems to be that he has red shoes on.
Yeah, and then they go chasing for him.
Exactly. So, like, Louis's about to run out after him, but then his dad grabs him, and his dad's, like, super strict, so his dad's like, you can't go out without your costume on. And Louis suits up as the Night Sniffer, who is, like, not just made up for this episode. Like, the Night Sniffer is a recurring part of Life with Louis. And it's essentially a dog dressed up in an old-timey judge suit with, like, the white wig and everything. And that's, like, that's Louis, childhood Louis Anderson's favorite character.
Yeah, let's talk about the parents, because the dad has his own little side story that I guess kind of ties into the end. I guess he's part of a neighborhood watch and there's like something that's going to happen. I'm not exactly 100% sure, but it all ties up at the end.
Yeah, there's definitely the B plot where Louis's dad and a couple of the other dads from the neighborhood are going around on patrol as neighborhood watch. And yeah, we'll tie back into that. So getting back to Louis's pursuit of that candy, he's after the guy in the kid in the ghost costume, only Glenn, who's a bully. He's an ongoing character in the show. He's a bully with a surprisingly quick wit, and he gets to the kid first. So Glenn now has this candy and isn't keen on giving it up. So there's going to be a tie into those convicts, though. So those convicts that they brought into school for that special assembly, one of the guys just happens to be behind Glenn and shakes him down for the candy.
See, I'm glad you said it that way, because I was watching this. I'm like, did I miss something? Mm-hmm. Like, did like, why are these convicts out trick-or-treating?
I had that same thing.
Yeah, my childhood brain just accepted everything for what it was. And then, you know, I had to rewind that part and try to figure it out. So, yeah, they were still very much convicts. I was trying to figure out if it was an ex-convict, but it was an escaped convict. So that really should be the scariest aspect of the show, but it doesn't seem that way. They didn't really play that up. But I want to talk about Glenn for a minute. So he's a brutish bully with a quick wit, like I was saying, and he has probably some of the best one-liners, not only in the show, but throughout the series. So he runs into a kid who's dressed as Dracula, and he goes, "Hey, Dracula, count this." And he lifts his fist up, you know, to intimidate and threaten him. Which, you know, great wordplay, Glenn.
But what is he supposed to be counting? Is he supposed to be counting punches, or what is he supposed to be counting?
Oh, it was his fist. He's just saying, like, count Dracula. Like, he's just playing off of that.
Yeah, but what on his fist is he supposed to be counting?
Oh, he's going to punch the kid. He's threatening to hit to assault him.
Yeah, but you're supposed to count punches? What's he counting?
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, I don't get it. What's he counting?
It's incredible. So then,
Well, closed fist is zero, right? Isn't that? Yeah.
Yeah.
He does other things, like he calls, like, in every episode when he sees Louie, he calls him something else that plays off of his name. So in this one, he's Night Loogie. Because Night he's supposed to be Night Sniffer. Then when he runs into the kid dressed as the ghost, he refers to him as Casper Weinberger, which this one took a bit of digging also to figure out, like, what's that in reference to. So it turns out Casper Weinberger, or Cap as they would refer to him in real life, was the former defense secretary. And he was very much involved in the Iran-Contra affair and got himself into a bit of trouble, but then was ultimately pardoned by George H.W. Bush in 92. So there's just like a whole, it's like a whole edgy, deep, buried thing in there that, you know, just needed to be in there.
Yeah, which is interesting since it's supposed to be, what, 1961?
Yeah, and I looked that up too, because then I was so eager to call them out on to call it a 90s cartoon show on another plot hole. But he was already a known politician by then, by the early 60s.
We thought we got him, but I guess not.
Yeah, we almost had them.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see what we have here. Well, anyway, that Casper Weinberger comment is how the kids know that Glenglin was the one who had the candy. So I took this a little bit out of order, but that's how when Louie was looking for the candy and he found the ghost kid but didn't find the candy, and the ghost kid mentioned, you know, it was some bully who referred to me as Casper Weinberger. They instantly knew it was Glenglin, and that's what took us to the point where the escaped convict was grabbing the candy off them.
Yeah, there's also, like, the show is just a little bit dark for children's television, I think. And, like, not even just, like, dark, just sort of, like, mean. Like, there's one part in this sequence where Louis's friends mistake him for an actual dog.
That's true.
And he just kind of, like, rolls it off like, oh, yeah, I'm that ugly. And it just, like, moves on. It's, like, this weird, like, it doesn't feel like a kid's show at that point.
Yeah, it's just like crowbar in insults every chance we get. So then, so Louis sees that the convict now has that piece of candy that he's obsessing on. And to make things interesting, the convict looks at Louis and he goes, I'll give you one chance to take the candy. And mind you, it's in like a big bag of other candy. And he goes, but you can't look. So now he's got to reach in there and hope that he gets it out of like a whole bag of candy. And of course, you know, in true 90s cartoon fashion, he does. So then he takes that piece of candy and he's immediately heading back to the store, and his plan is to break in and return that piece of candy into inventory like he did from the beginning. So once he's in, it's Louie climbing in through a window, which, you know, makes for a lot of visual humor. And once he gets in, he realizes that the front door was open, and realizes why the front door was open. Those escaped convicts are in the market, robbing it for all it's got.
It's where largely start the to... candy, right? They're looking mostly for the candy, is what it seems like from the cartoon.
So yeah, he gets in there to return the candy, only to see all these ex-cons from the special assembly, you know, robbing the place. And quickly, the news, the police, and the neighborhood watch, B-plot, show up, and they deem a very hesitant Louie a hero. So it sort of adds on to like the guilt he was feeling for having stole the candy in the first place. And he does try to explain himself and say, like, I'm no hero, but they're not trying to hear that. Like, they're just putting cameras and microphones in his face and talking him up.
Yeah, and he's trying to come clean, but nobody's listening to him.
Exactly.
Yes, Steve, what you're saying is this episode's really about, like, the distortion of information through media.
Okay, yeah, so you hit on it right away.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that was exactly it. And that's where things wrapped. There was like a small scene at the end where Louis returns home and his mom, the voice of reason, is like, you know, I knew that you took that candy, but I still think you're a hero because you tried to do the right thing. Oh, and by the way, the store manager left something for you in your room, and he opens the door and a million pieces of candy come, you know, barreling over him. And, you know, big twist at the end.
He's got
all the candy. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
All right, so let's get into that family feud, Kurt.
Before we get into that, let's try to figure out what is actually true in this story and what's not. because, I mean, do you really think all of this stuff happened in his life?
Oh, good point.
You know, they say it's based off of his stand-up. I would say, you know, we were joking about it before that there was an incident where he took candy. By season three, they're probably just letting the writers write. They probably know the general, like, aesthetic of his humor and trying to find something that would work. I guess it's possible he stole a piece of candy when he was 8 and felt guilty about it and tried to return it. That's probably where the line is drawn.
I guess it's possible. I mean, I don't know. In the 60s, maybe they had assemblies back then of convicts coming to schools to talk to kids. Does that even happen now?
I can see that. Probably not. I mean, I don't know, but I could definitely see it back then where it was like a little bit more kind of like tougher lessons that they wanted to give these kids.
Yeah, and then escaping was probably something that really happened.
Yeah.
These kids.
Yeah, that was just a regular Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why all those horror movies came out in the 70s, is because the 60s is just constantly people escaping on Halloween. I think, you know, it is interesting to point out, though, that what you have here is a period piece children's cartoon from the 90s that's taking place in the 60s. I mean, you had, like, the Wonder Years on television not too much earlier than this, but that's still a pretty unique thing, even now.
Oh, having a period piece? For a cartoon?
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of another cartoon, you know, outside of something that maybe is more focused on action that's really doing anything but trying to be contemporary, because I think most people believe that kids are going to respond best to things that are of their time.
They can relate to, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, Life with Louie was a pretty big success.
Yeah, in a way it makes it more timeless, you know?
Right, yeah, you've controlled the timing of it already, and you're not trying to make it seem completely modern, so you never really lose that. I mean, it's a bit of a stretch, but it's not totally dissimilar from Batman the Animated Series, where they use that Dark Deco style to give it that not right. any real time in our history look.
Yeah, I remember trying to figure out what time period that was supposed to take place in, like, when I was younger, and it just, like, it made no sense. It's the Art Deco design of, like the 1940s, sort of, but then there's futuristic tech.
Yeah, and Fox was innovative as far as children's television goes. You know, on Dissecting Fiction, we talked to the Leewalds, who were a huge part of X-Men, which was a huge part of changing children's animation in the 90s. Fox was always on their side, just really what they talked about is how, you know, open the network was to new ideas.
One thing I think is interesting about this is that and a lot of shows do this, but it's a fictional town in a non-fictional state. So that kind of goes along with, like, the whole timeless thing too a bit. So Cedar Knolls isn't a real place like we talked about, or Cedar Knoll, Wisconsin. Louis Anderson's actually, I think, from St. Paul. He's from that area, that general area, but they made up the town, so I always think that's interesting, like, when other shows do that too. So Roseanne, for example, the sitcom, was in Lanford, Illinois, which isn't a real place, but they chose a real state, but then they just make up a town.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, especially knowing that this is supposed to be coming from Anderson's stand-up, where obviously in stand-up you almost always talk about your upbringing, your family. I think it allows for that natural blur you have about your past to be utilized a little better. If you're trying to say you're in an exact place, then, you know, someone's going to think, oh, that's not what happened. I grew up there. If you make it a fake place, you can use all those ideas and the reality in your head can be projected a little better into the story.
Good point. And the same thing probably with the characters, where it's like, you know, let's just have a nice mix of people. And then I'm sure that they're composites of, like, different of his friends that were into different hijinks and shenanigans, and they can just lend it to whatever character it would be more fitting for.
Yeah, and you know, that we were talking about a little bit about that edge too, that it allows, you know, Fox probably allowed them to have. You know, this episode specifically was written by Alex Taub, who would really start here. From what I could see, his first major credit was Life with Louie, but went on to a bunch of different projects, including stuff for Marvel. But I think it's important to point out that Burt Ring was the director, and he worked a bunch on the first season of Family Guy, which objectively isn't too far after this, and with Fox. Perhaps some of this adult attitude we were perceiving is because the creators they were using weren't necessarily tied down to children's television.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. You know what I think is interesting is there's just three seasons of Life with Louie. It ran from 94 to beginning of, oh, basically late 94 to beginning of 98. So, and how late? 1994? It started with the Christmas special. And I remember that. I remember, like, not planning to watch that, but I remember seeing that, I'm pretty sure, first showing. It was December 18th, 1994, was a Christmas surprise for Mrs. Stillman. And this is, like, this is adult humor, too, to some extent. And this is a Halloween show, so I won't get too into it, but it's a Christmas surprise for Mrs. Stillman. She's Jewish. And that very much comes into the plot of this episode, where they notice she doesn't have Christmas lights hanging on her house. So then when she leaves her house, they quickly go and load it up with decorations. And she comes home and they realize she's Jewish. But so that was the first episode. That was 1994. And the show runs to, well, it ends on a Mother's Day episode in March 2nd of 98.
Yeah, so it's really this not a long run as this, yeah.
Yeah, not a long run, but like a very memorable show for that Fox Kids afternoon.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, I don't think it's, you know, a problem to talk about other holidays anchoring the show. You know, it shows the type of intent that they had, that they were trying to create these sort of touchstone episodes. Mm-hmm. You know, the reason you do a Halloween episode is to make parts of your plot automatically relatable. It's just a really good tool. And I think what's interesting here is this was a Halloween episode that didn't focus on costumes, really. Like, as you're saying, like, it's really like that end of the episode where you even get that part of Halloween. But it does definitely focus on candy, which I think to quite a few people is the main point of Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah. Life with Louie is one of the few shows that has a great Thanksgiving episode. And those holiday episodes, for me, I see them as like gateway episodes. So if you're not into a show, like a specific show, but it's that time of year and you see like, oh, there's a Halloween special, a Christmas special, or what have you, you're probably more willing to give it a shot. And then a lot of times, if you end up liking it, you'll just be like, okay, yeah, this is another show that I like. This is another show I watch. So it's a good move. And I'm surprising sometimes when shows don't do that.
The cool thing is that a lot of these shows, even if you start with the Halloween one or the Christmas one, the Thanksgiving one, you still kind of get a feel for who the characters are just because of the writing. It's not something that you need to start from the beginning and then be like, oh, well, the Halloween episode is not going to make sense because I'm not starting from the beginning of the show. I don't know what's going on. You can just start from those, and 90% of the time you're going to come out with, oh yeah, I actually understood it, so let's go watch the rest of them. It is a good gateway.
No, you're exactly right, because people come for topics and they'll stay for the characters, you know, like they'll come for the content, stay for the characters kind of thing. So if you can pull them in on the specifics of whatever topic that you're covering, and the characters are relatable and likable and dynamic enough, they'll stick around.
Yeah, I remember doing that a lot as a kid, that I would always search for different shows when it was the Halloween season, and I would watch shows that I've never watched before just because it was a Halloween episode.
Yeah, I still find that to be true. I can even think recently there was a Halloween episode of The Goldbergs, and I've never watched The Goldbergs, but I found out they were doing a Halloween episode, so I was like, all right, cool.
they have a bunch of them, and they're all really good, because there's so many pop culture references, and like, meaning from the 80s, that's a period piece sitcom that takes place throughout the 80s, and they do it so well.
Yeah, when I was a kid, there was a show, I don't remember what the show was, but the only reason I watched it was because I was watching some other show, and in that other show there was a commercial for this other show, and it wasn't even a Halloween episode, but it looked like a scary episode, and I was all for it. So I waited for that show to come on, and I even recorded it on my VHS tape of Halloween stuff, and mm-hmm. I actually ended up liking the show, so I would watch more of it. That's like a key thing that a lot of these people doing sitcoms now, like they don't utilize the feeling of Halloween. Like, when was the last time you actually saw a really good Halloween episode?
I'm not sure. I mean, I would have to say the Goldbergs, but I think they're intentionally playing into everything that you're saying, Lyle, because that's kind of the essence of their show, is to have that nostalgia. Most of the modern shows don't. You're right.
Yeah, and if they would only use that tool of doing like a really good, like scary Halloween episode, they would probably last longer than two seasons, because a lot of these shows don't last that long.
Oh, you mean not only to have like a good Halloween episode, but to have an actual like scary Halloween episode that's like legitimately scary?
Yes, like
okay.
What could I use it as an example? Did you guys ever see Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place?
No.
Not for a long time.
They have... I haven't done any of the episodes on the Halloween podcast, but they have some of the best Halloween episodes, because they're like the Treehouse of Horror, where it's a standalone. Like, these people die in the Halloween episodes, but then the next episode, they're magically back. So it's kind of like one of those things where if they would just do that type of stuff now, I really think they would catch more people like, oh, I actually kind of like this show because there's a character I relate to. So I'm going to come back next week after watching this really cool Halloween episode and just keep watching the show, or just put it on the DVR and just keep watching it. But I don't feel like they do that anymore.
I know one example of a show within the last decade or so that did do it, but I'm going to say this as a little tease for Dissecting Fiction. We're going to be covering that there, so keep a lookout. But generally, I think the reason you don't see it is how proliferated television is now. If a network wants something scary, they're going to go on their streaming service and have someone make a horror anthology for them. You know, you have access to so much more media that I feel like probably a lot of studios are hesitant to produce something that goes too far off of what they're making, because if it's successful, they want to keep their little corner of the market and someone else will worry about making that show. That's how I feel about it. I mean, you have like Shudder put out Creepshow around Halloween this past year. I think that's where you're going to see a lot of it, is you're going to see more original content, but not necessarily connected to existing franchises. I just think that's the way the industry is starting to go.
Yeah, they really need to look back in order to move ahead. Yeah, they really should. But
well, I guess it's what kids these days want, you know?
Yeah,
who knows?
I don't know. I have three kids, and I honestly have no idea what they want.
Yeah.
Like, well, I guess I do kind of know. I mean, my youngest, Kalexi, she's 4. She wants to watch the Ryan guy, the Ryan Toys reviews on YouTube. That's all she wants to watch. My son, Callan, for whatever reason, he has a fascination with fans, so he just wants to watch YouTube videos of fans spinning. He's like my serial killer. And then
well, there's our episode.
Yeah. And then my oldest, she's 12. She, like, I don't know, she watches animated things. I don't know. But where can we really put the Halloween stuff in that?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. It's like, it's so hard to grab their attention. So to tie it back to the whole Halloween episode being a gateway into liking that show, oftentimes how that was done, at least for me, would be a network would essentially throw an event. So Nickelodeon, you know, that would have Snick, would do Snick or Treat. So now I'm like bought in, like, to whatever they're going to show me. Like, I would really just want to watch one show, But once they made it into a whole event and mm-hmm. the commercial bumpers and stuff were like the whole animation through a graveyard and a jack-o'-lantern starts talking to you and all that stuff, it's like, okay, I'll also watch this show. And then, okay, I'll also watch that because in my mind, now I'm bought into the whole night.
Yeah, I mean, TGIF did the same exact thing where they did all four shows were all Halloween related.
Yeah, so it's worth sticking around. You're already in that mindset. You're in that mood.
That's the funny thing, too, is because now we have so much control over what we can watch in a day. Like, you can almost make those type of marathons on your own. Maybe that's why they're disappearing, is they're counting on the fact that people aren't going to necessarily sit through something that they don't like every part of because they have so many choices.
But it's not as fun.
Oh, I'm with you. I agree. I would totally watch blocks of programming with blindly, but I don't know if everyone would.
Maybe people our age might. I mean, if I had my choice of getting like the TGIF lineup of like Sabrina and Boy Meets World, if I were to find all of those, I don't know if they're on Hulu or if it's Disney Plus now, who knows what it's on. But if I were to get all of the Halloween episodes and block them together, I don't want to watch that. I want to watch it on like the TGIF with the Halloween commercials in it too, and just have the whole feeling of it. But I don't know, that stuff just seems like it's gone.
Right. Does it also make it feel a little bit more substantial or real in like time and space when you're watching it live on TV, when you know other people are also having the same experience, as opposed to clicking on a link on YouTube?
I have thought of that, and I always thought, like, I had an idea for a podcast a long time ago where I would get other people to watch TV with me at the same exact time, but we would watch stuff as it aired in like the 90s. So my thought was to get four shows of the TGIF lineup for a Friday in like 92 or something, and then watch those four blocks with people and kind of give like reactions to it. But I do feel like having that interaction where people are all watching it at the same exact time is best, because you could, I mean, back in the day, we would get into chat rooms and just like chat about these things after it happened, or you'd go to school on Monday morning and just start talking about what Steve Urkel did on the last episode of Family Matters. So it's, oh man, I miss those days.
Yeah, there's certainly an element of that now, though, too. You know, with the Twitch broadcasting, things like that, there is that communal watching does exist. It's interesting if maybe, you know, if someone took the chance and tried to go back to that sort of block programming with, like, themed bumpers and, you know, the commercials running through it, if you somehow could market it as that communal event, maybe it would take off.
It's possible. I mean, I really don't understand the whole streaming thing. I mean, I come from the generation of this type of stuff only happened when you wanted to see girls like walking around in their bedrooms. So to me, that when I think of Twitch, and I mean, I've never really gone into it or anything, but when I think of that stuff, all I think about is just creepy dudes wanting to watch girls do weird things in their rooms. So I like that whole aspect of it. I think it's the first step of becoming a dad. Like, I just don't get those things that the kids are doing nowadays.
There's still some of it, because people will set an alarm to watch a show, like, it's off the air now, but like Game of Thrones, they would want to see it like as soon as it comes on. But then you'd still also have, instead of full water cooler talk the next day, you'd still also have like some of the people, like let's say a third of the people, like, oh, I haven't seen it yet, you know, don't talk about it. But I think, you know, back in the day, you didn't really have to respect that as much, because you weren't getting all these chances to see it.
You didn't have a choice
like that. Yeah,
you needed to watch it, or else you weren't going to watch it.
Right. Yeah, it's like you screwed up, like you missed it. Now it's like, oh no, it went from, oh, I TiVo'd it to haven't watched it on HBO Go yet.
Yeah, which is another like tie-in to Life with Louie, kind of alluded to it before. Life with Louie is not available on DVD. It is not really available on any streaming. You can kind of track the episodes down. It is extremely popular in Europe, apparently, and is available there. But we alluded to a little bit of a family feud curse. I think we all kind of agreed to leave Louie's troubles for the internet, if you want to look that up on your own.
Yeah, we don't want to get specific, but Louie Anderson ultimately fell victim to the Family Feud host curse. And maybe that's a reason why his stuff's not as available as it should be or as other people's stuff was.
That's possible. Yeah. I mean, you can still find The Cosby Show floating around, but not as much as you did 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's not like anyone is actively banning Life with Louie from, you know, the normal outlets, but it's also not as available as so many things now, especially, you know, 2020 has even been this humongous boom for content being available between the launch of HBO Max, Disney Plus at the end of last year.
Yeah, that was huge.
It's almost bizarre that it's not, and I can't help but feel that some of the controversies that would later befall Louie Anderson contributed to people maybe not wanting to put up children's programming related to him.
Well, are there other Fox shows that you can't really find? Do you think maybe Fox is thinking of doing a streaming service themselves? Do they even have one out already?
Well, under Disney, a lot of the Fox content is going to Hulu. That seems to be where its home is going to be. There's certainly gaps in that catalog. I know a lot of people, myself included, are looking for the live-action Marvel stuff they did for the network, which the Nick Fury film had an official release, and that DVD is now like $100, and Generation X never had a release. There are gaps. There are places these shows could show up, but we got to remember now, too, Fox is owned by Disney in that respect, and it's another reason that maybe it'll never pop up if Disney goes, hey, we're not comfortable with some of the controversy that came later. They may just not use it.
Yeah, so let's get into this curse. The Family Feud curse.
There's got to be just a list that somebody's already compiled.
I tried looking for one, but I couldn't find one. I remember watching a long time ago, I don't know if it was a commercial or if it was just something on TV, but they actually were talking about the curse. There's where I first started hearing about it. They kind of made it in like a ghost story type feel about what happened to the hosts. And I remember the last one was of Richard Karn. All I remember was that, and I remember it vividly, there was a picture of Richard Karn like in the back of a milk carton, and it said something like, nobody knows where he is now. And here I am, I don't know how much longer later, he's on Twitter. Like he's around.
It's completely fine.
So I don't know what that whole like the he's nowhere to be found thing was. They probably just did it for theatrics on whatever it was I was watching.
Yeah, what I'm seeing here is the so-called curse. Obviously, we talked a little briefly about some controversy surrounding Louie Anderson and his career. Richard Dawson, the original host, was apparently pretty much wasted for most of the tapings.
But is that a curse? he was just drinking.
I mean, let's be honest. People stretch the word curse quite a bit. The creator of the show died kind of unexpectedly when his son took over and wanted to change the direction. The big one is going to be, you know, Ray Combs committing suicide.
Yeah, I mean, Dawson had cancer.
I think maybe there's a lot of these long-standing game shows that will have the same host for like decades, and they've changed hosts so many times. I think that just drew attention to it. Obviously there's some stuff there, but you know, Jeopardy, it's just Alex Trebek. Wheel of Fortune, you know, it's Pat Sajak and Vanna White. Like, yeah, so
it probably just seemed more like it's probably somewhat tumultuous is what we can gather from the little bit of research we just did. But The curse is more just Family Feud's not always the best place to work.
That's probably it right there. It's just whoever is running Family Feud just has no idea what they're doing.
Don't solve that one.
They have so many surveys to conduct. It gets confusing.
No surveys. Who does it now? Is it even still on?
Steve Harvey did it.
And Mr. Peterman did it for a while, too. I remember that.
That's true. Yeah. See, look how many hosts there are.
And Steve Harvey. And then it was Richard Karn, Dawson, Ray Combs. I think that was it. I can't think
of anyone. And Louis Anderson.
Yeah. But that's it. Yeah. The curse, not so much a curse. Just probably these people just have no idea what they're doing. Or they give these hosts really, really short contracts of like a year or two. It could be a number of reasons.
I think it's just employee retention. They just have issues with that.
But again, Steve Harvey's still there. Still long run.
Growing strong.
Yep.
Yep. Steve Harvey still going at it. All right, guys. So before we get going, let's give our final thoughts on this half Halloween episode of Life with Louie.
Yeah, I would say going into it, I didn't really remember a lot of the specifics of the plot. But having rewatched it for the show, it's actually not one of the better Halloween specials, just because Halloween itself doesn't play that big of a role in the episode. So while it'll still be on the playlist, certainly, it's not like a must watch every year.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's funny. I think for all of the sort of coarseness to it, and it's just a little bit dark and a little bit ridiculous, I did end up liking it a lot more than I thought I would. I do tend to lean towards horror movie kind of Halloween, but I thought that this made a lot of sense, and there probably are a lot of kids who focus on the candy aspect of Halloween. And I mean, you have a bunch of escaped convicts in it, so there's a little bit of a horror element. I say it's worth a watch. You know, give it a try on your Halloween marathon this year. If you don't like it, you can always cut it.
Yeah, so the Life with Louie episode, it is half Halloween. There's really not much Halloween reference. I kind of feel like it tried to do more of an internal scare, like he was scared he was going to get caught for stealing that little candy. He was afraid of the consequences, not necessarily afraid of any monster. Well, I guess the clerk could have been considered a monster, counting his candies. But the episode, it was fun. It did have a lot of good zingers in it. I did like the one where his mom was telling him what to do, and he's like, oh, what am I, your slave? I thought that was funny. There were a lot of good zingers. So this would be an episode if you're reaching out for some nostalgic stuff. I didn't really get that nostalgic feeling with the show, even though I did watch it as a kid. I don't remember ever watching this Halloween one. I do remember watching another one that was kind of scary that I have on my Halloween tape, the one that says Halloween is cool. That one, there's an episode of Life with Louie in that one where he's like trying to scare his younger brother. And then all I remember from that is when he keeps saying throughout the entire episode, yeah, it's part of the job description about being a big brother. So that's what I remember the most about that episode. This one, I had zero memory of. But I thought it was a good episode. It was funny and something that you guys need to check out. Thank you guys so much for coming on. Why don't you go ahead and give us your podcast again?
Sure. You can find the Dissecting Fiction podcast on almost all major podcast platforms. We talk a lot about pop culture, a lot about different types of fiction, comics, movies, TV, video games. And honestly, if you type Dissecting Fiction into Google, you're going to find us. I'm not even concerned. So take a look. Thanks.
Perfect. All right, so that's going to do it for this episode of the Halloween Podcast. If you guys have any questions, comments, or want to suggest anything for your future show, you can go ahead and send those to thehalloweenpodcast@gmail.com. You can also go to our new website, thehalloweenpodcast.com. You can go ahead. There's a contact me there if you'd rather do that rather than sending me an email. Feel free. You can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/thehalloweenpodcast. We're on Twitter at The Halloween Pod. If you guys like to support the show, you can do it a bunch of different ways. You can go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. Those always help. You can also go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/thehalloweenpod. You can become a monthly giver. You get access to bonus content and the longer shows. You'll probably hear the TGIF show me and these guys just recorded a couple of minutes ago. You could help us out, and it would be a blessing. Trust me. All right, guys. Thank you guys for coming on. And all of you listeners, I'll see you guys again tomorrow for another episode in the Halloween Countdown. Have a good night.